Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and I'm crossing my fingers that my voice will last throughout our interview tonight. I'm very excited about the guest I'll be sharing with you tonight. For those of you who are regular listeners, I hope that you had a chance to check out Mark's website and his book, The Secret of Teams. And tonight, it's another exciting book to make a difference both as a leader and also as a parent, as a person who has influence in a lot of areas in our lives. Sometimes we don't have a title of leader, but we have that opportunity to influence our children, committees that we work on, our colleagues. And Jeremy Kingsley is coming out with a very exciting book called Inspired People Produce Results, How Great Leaders Use Passion, Purpose, and Principles to Unlock Incredible Growth. And I'm very excited to be able to be part of Jeremy's social media book launch this week. His book is currently in the pre-order stage. So for those of you who are listening, you are getting the news ahead of most of your colleagues. Jeremy is a professional speaker, author, and president of One Life Leadership. Since 1995, he's spoken to over 500,000 people at live events around the world. He's given over 2,000 keynote speeches, and his messages have reached millions through radio, TV, and the internet. And this is not Jeremy's first book. I believe it's his fourth, and it's the one that we're going to focus on tonight. I am so excited to have you. Welcome, Jeremy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. And before we dive into the book, for those listeners who may not know you, could you tell us a little bit about who is Jeremy Kingsley?
Sure. Well, I am a husband. I've been married to my wife, Dawn. This summer, we will have our 19th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My birthday is May 4th. I'll be 41. I've got an 11-year-old son named Jaden, who's in 6th grade. I have a 6-year-old son named Dylan, who's in kindergarten. And we have a precious 9-month-old puppy dog named Cody, and he is definitely part of our family. And I just have a passion to try to help people. I have a passion for leadership and I would say kind of on the hobby side, some things for fun. I'm definitely a runner. I enjoy exercising and being outside, and running is one of the things I love to do.
Well, that's interesting, and I always click on the connections that I have with you. I have an 11-year-old in 6th grade as well. His name is Alex.
All right.
And so I'm sure there's some conversations we can have about the exciting adventures of parenting. However, we'll save that for another day. So knowing a little bit about you, and as I said, this is not your first book. However, usually there is a journey or there's something that plants a seed that leads to a book. What was the seed idea or experience that led you to write Inspired People Produce Results?
Yeah, great question, because this book has come from a few different ideas and thoughts that I've had. One, I was kind of going through my life and thinking back, 15, 20 years ago at some of the different jobs that I had and the bosses that I had. Some I liked, some I didn't like, and there were certain reasons for that. And as I thought through some of those concepts, I also started to notice, when I would be speaking at different places, Lots of times off stage, you know, before or after an event, a number of leaders would come up and they would ask certain questions about leadership or inspiring people. And as I started to kind of take notes of all the different thoughts and questions and answers that I believed in, it just kind of occurred, you know what, we need a resource to just put these things together because it seems like we're missing that. And that was kind of the genesis for this whole book.
Was there one particular story or spark that really said, okay, now it's time to write the book?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when I was thinking back and I was on an airplane and I was sitting next to a person who was a boss and she said, you know, what do you do? And I asked her what she did and we had a nice little conversation going and then she just said, you know, I want to ask you a question. I'm really struggling with some of the employees and there's one in particular and she went on to tell this story and I started to share with her some different principles that I thought could help the situation and it just kind of occurred to me, you know what, this is pretty prevalent. There are a lot of leaders who maybe want to help people but don't necessarily know how or they want to inspire people, but they're not sure what it is that inspires people. And that was something right then that I think when I got off of that plane ride, when all those thoughts kind of were coming together, you know what, it's time to sit down and we need to crank this thing out as a resource that we really believe could have an influence on a lot of people and organizations.
Well, I'm glad you did. It's been a very, very interesting and easy read. You obviously have experience and a background both as a speaker as well as being able to tell stories effectively in writing. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience with storytelling?
Yeah, my dad is a great storyteller, and I remember as a young boy, even around, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, when I grew up in the southwestern part of Wisconsin, and we would go to my aunt's for Christmas, and we'd have all the relatives there, and I remember my aunt, every year she would say to my dad, would you please tell a story? And she'd get all the cousins and aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas around, and my dad would tell these stories, and people would just be captivated. He was creative and detailed, and he knew when to be funny and when to be serious, and he could have the tear-jerk moment where people would be crying, and I just thought, my dad is amazing. I just thought he was one of my heroes, and so being able to kind of sit under him my whole life and see that, you know, he was an educator, he was involved in church work, he was always trying to help people in the community. And I noticed that because he spoke a lot, that I had the opportunity to learn a lot about storytelling from him.
Well, I'm glad you did because it absolutely comes through in the stories that you weave into the principles and inspire people, produce results. Before we go into the content of the book itself, first of all, you know, we know that it's been a tough time for a lot of businesses through the recent recession and that, you know, at least the people that I know go to work every day wanting to do good work, wanting to make a difference, and yet they're frustrated by situations, by managers. Your book says that inspiration is a key to both individual and organization success. First, how do you define inspiration?
Yeah, I really do believe that to be true. And inspiration, there's a few different definitions, but the one that I personally believe in that I would say is the number one definition is this, that inspiration is it's actions that influence, move, or guide people to other actions. So it's your actions, people get this influence, move, or guide people to other actions. So that's where I always try to ask the leaders, you know, having influence, you a guide for other people that are watching you to action.
Jeremy, are you still there?
Yep, still here.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if I had lost you or if you just finished your sentence.
Nope. Did you just catch that part about actions that influence, move, or guide people to other actions?
Yes.
Great.
See, we've had this snow sitting over us for the last, 15 to 30 hours in Iowa, so sometimes the technology gets me a little nervous. I wanted to make sure I didn't lose you. But finding out in our pre-call that you grew up on the Wisconsin side of Iowa, you understand about those Midwest snowstorms.
Absolutely. I have a lot of memories growing up, and as a little boy, I thought all those snowstorms were great. But as I got older, I kind of was excited to move down south to get a little break from all that.
Funny you should say that, because I have the child who does the happy dance outside with the first snowfall and is upset when anybody else in the country has snow and we don't.
Right.
So getting back to, so that's your definition of inspiration, which I think is a very powerful one. And then what makes inspiration a critical leadership skill today, do you think?
Well, when you think about leaders and they're trying to figure out in this competitive world, you know, what is it that will make my business stand out? What is it that will make my organization stand out? And people still understand in leadership circles that it comes back down to people. And there's a lot of machines, there's a lot of computers, there's a lot of software, a lot of things that's happening out there, but there's still people involved that make all this happen. And for a leader, when he or she is hiring the group that they want to work and be around on a basis, they have to work through, hey, is this a group of people that I can encourage? Is this a group of people that I can influence? And they want a group of people who want to work, who are excited about the job and the skill set that they're able to use. So he has to keep working through if he's really inspiring that group consistently.
Okay. And inspiration is not something that's commonly listed among leadership skills, and I think that's part of what helps your book stand out among the other very good leadership resources, is that this is a very different perspective around really looking at something that leaders can do, parents can do, coaches can do, and the power of inspiration as a skill set and as a tool that can be used. So let's, before I get into the principles that are in the book, I'm curious about how you chose to organize the book, because you did two of my favorite things. You started each chapter with a quote, and you included some bullet points, insights for inspiration at the end. Could you tell us a little bit about your thinking and the way that you organized the book?
Sure. You know, one of the things that stuck out to me when I was kind of working through the outline was I wanted to do two things. One, I wanted to start with the idea of passion, because I think that's one of the key issues for leaders when they're looking at themselves and their own personal passion, because you have to have passion to help other people create passion. So I wanted to start that right at the beginning. And I wanted to end the book with a chapter on integrity, because I felt like looking in recent history and recent corporate history, you know, Bernie Madoff, all the different stories we've heard about of people that have kind of cheated and lied and tricked people and definitely showed a lack of integrity, that is a big deal, and that's one of the crushers of inspiration, is when people can't trust you. So I wanted to end with integrity, and then the middle part would be these other pieces of the pie, these other principles. But, you know, with the bullet points, you know, that kind of came from learning from other books, you know, other books that I've tried to read, and you kind of finish a chapter, and then you kind of forget, you know, a day or two later, you know, what chapter was some of those crucial points that I kind of remember, and if you didn't highlight it. But then there are these other books that I was reading that would have these kind of takeaway points, or I like to call them little action steps or little bullet points for memory. So that was something that I felt pretty strongly about. Let's put a few of those At the end of each chapter, it'll be easy for the readers if they want to go back and find some of those key elements.
Absolutely. And being the voracious reader that I am, they do absolutely help in finding those key points and sparking some ideas for actions that people can take. And you mentioned that you started with one of your favorites, one of my favorite principles, and that is passion. My regular listeners know that I'm a certified passion test facilitator based on the passion test by Chris Atwood and Janet Bray Atwood. And the research that you cited in this chapter on passion in the workplace is what sparked Janet and Chris to write the passion test so that people could discover their passion. And you do a good job of explaining the connection between passion and inspiration. And it's not just doing what you're good at, it's doing what you're passionate about. So first of all, why do you think passion is important in the workplace?
Well, you know, one thing that I've noticed, and you've probably seen this too, in the last 5 or 10 years, there's been this big influx about looking for strengths. You know, what are you strong in? What are your top gifts? What are your best skills? You know, everyone has to be in that spot where they're strong. And I do believe that to be true, but if you leave that by itself and you don't add the idea of passion, you can have some miserable people who just happen to be good at something. You know, and I think, you know, and just kind of as a little bit of an illustration, you know, I don't mind vacuuming in my house, but I don't want to vacuum 8 hours a day. You know, I might be good at it. It might be a skill. It might be a strong point that I have in cleaning, but I don't really want to vacuum for 8 hours and try to get paid for it. So, you know, one thing that's bothered me is a little bit in that influx of the strength talks and conversations is, you know, what if someone's strong in something, but they don't have a joy? They don't have a passion. There's not a strong love inside about what they're doing. So what I've been trying to work through with people is, hey, let's see, what are the things you're passionate about? There's an excitement, a joy. It's connected to a skill because we could be passionate about things that we're not gifted at, but trying to find a strength that can be connected to a skill. So we keep two of those words with S, the strength connected to the skill, and that's when you often find a very, very productive employee, a very, very productive leader as well.
And that reminded me, as you were talking about the difference between strength and passion, took me back to high school. I've loved science ever since I got my first microscope at age 7. And my classmates had said, oh, you should be a doctor, you know. And I said, no, I don't want to be responsible for someone's life in my hands. Now, their mind, I'll mess with that. So, but they were like, but you're so good at science and you could make all this money being a doctor. And I probably could have done it. And I was skilled at it, and I wasn't as passionate about it. Being a teacher, a trainer, a facilitator, that's my passion. And so you made such a brilliant point about the two are not necessarily the same thing. And as a manager or a leader, we sometimes do a disservice to the people we work with when we look only at their strengths. And you did a beautiful job in that chapter of pointing that out. How does passion, do you think, impact a team in the workplace?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that stands out to me is that, you know, passion is attractive. You know, a lot of people understand that idea that passion is attractive. And if you even think about relationships, and I'm not a huge fan of trying to put everything in your life into a little compartment. So you have like 6, 8, 10 different lives. Of course, my organization is called One Life for a reason because I believe there's one life, and we try to live that to the fullest that we can. But like, I have friends that have developed passion for certain foods, and as I continued to be around them, and I would try it once and it was okay, and I tried it a second time and I kind of liked it, and the third time I was asking them if we could go eat that food. And you know, I've seen it with sports teams, and you start hanging around certain friends and you start liking their sports teams because they're passionate about it. it's funny that in relationships, you know, things that people are passionate about oftentimes are attractive. So move that into relationships in the workplace. Well, when someone has a joy that's connected to that skill that we were just talking about, and there's kind of this positive attitude there, that can affect the team in great ways. I mean, if you have skilled people who aren't necessarily passionate about their job, they may finish a certain order. You know, they may reach, you know, X, Y, and Z for that week. But it's the passionate group or the passionate team, they'll often go beyond what the norm is because they do have that joy there. And when that passion and that excitement gets contagious because it's attractive, then all of a sudden that team gets a lot of synergy because they start to believe together what they can do as a team.
And that can take them to much higher places. As the title of your book says, inspired people produce results. When you've got the energy that's fueled by passion, it can take you through a lot of the challenges that can otherwise stall a team.
Right, and that's what that leaders start to realize is you can get a certain amount of results from a skilled person who maybe doesn't have a joy or passion, but you get greater results from a person or a team who does have a passion, a joy connected to their skill set.
Absolutely. The next chapter in the book talks about purpose. And that's also in the subtitle, How Great Leaders Use Passion Purpose. So how do you connect, well, first of all, how do you see the role of purpose in inspiration?
Yeah, I think there's something that stands out, especially for the younger employees right now, is if you look at maybe the age group or the demographic, you know, 22 to 32 years old, you know, they're a little bit different than the baby boomer generation where, you know, a lot of the baby boomer group, they were obviously hardworking and very thankful to have a job and that they could finish their work and get that paycheck, and that was a big deal and part of the society that they grew up in. And I don't know, you know, all the background of why the new generation thinks differently, but we obviously know that they do, and they tend to ask a question about purpose, which is often why, you know. Why does this job matter? Why does this task matter? You know, if I fulfill this order, you know, is there a purpose behind it? Is there something that really has some meaning? And that's what's interesting to me, because I think some of the leaders who can show that there's purpose, you know, there's a reason, and actually explain why to the younger group of generational workers, that can inspire them, because when they feel like, hey, you know what? I'm not just here getting a paycheck. I'm doing something that matters, or I'm doing something that serves people. I'm doing something that helps a family or a person or society. And if that leader can show that purpose, again, inspires that group toward great results.
That's one of the principles that Dan Pink talks about in his work, Drive, the surprising factors that motivate us. Is that sense of purpose, that there's something bigger that I can connect to than just making the widget today or filling out this report form today. It also can give people that extra energy to move through the challenges that can happen on the job. What do you see as the connection between purpose and passion?
Well, I think they're definitely connected. When I think of the leaders that I've talked to over the years, and you see the things that they're passionate about, that there's an excitement, there's a strong love and desire for, they say, you know what? What can we do with this passion and desire to actually have an effect, whether it's corporately or in the communities? You know, a lot of the greatest leaders, I believe, don't just try to make a great living and help the economic circumstances, but they also want to help the communities, you know, socially and things like that. And lots of times you'll see these passionate guys come back and say, you know what, it's connected to the purpose. And the reason why I'm passionate about this is because there's a purpose behind it. It's almost kind of like they're linked, like brothers, you know, passion and purpose. You know, what am I excited about? Why? What can be accomplished when I do these things? X, Y, and Z. Okay, well, let's share that with the employees. Let's share that with the organization. And many times, you know, some people use the phrase, you know, what is the culture like, you know, where you work? What is the atmosphere around? Well, we have a very passionate leader, sometimes people will say, if it's a positive culture, who really believes that what we're doing has a purpose, and here's what the purpose is. It serves this. So they're definitely linked, I'd say hand in hand.
And they do work well together when you have both of them at play, and keeping that bigger picture, that purpose in front of employees, again, can really help, especially when the challenges come or when the energy's waning, or there's an aspect of change that's happening that people may wonder about. The next sections of the book are the principles referred to in the subtitle, Principles to Unlock Incredible Growth. And so chapter 4, you talk about loyalty. And as we both know, and as many of my listeners know, that there's definitely been a change in the generations when it comes to loyalty. I have some classmates even from college that graduated in the 80s who have been with the same company since they graduated from college, but that's very few. Most people now don't plan to stay with the same employer. And when we think of loyalty, we often think of like decades of loyalty. And loyalty can also be looked at maybe in a little bit different way. But first of all, what are your thoughts about the change with loyalty in the workplace?
Yeah, I think, again, there's some generational differences there. When I think about my grandfather or my father, you know, staying with a certain school system for years and years and years, you know, educationally, or serving in the military for years and years and years, or working at a nonprofit group years and years and years. We don't see that as much anymore. And for some reason, it's kind of interesting. You see it from both sides. It's not only the employees that aren't necessarily staying for 10, 15, 20 years, but I think there's a lack of loyalty also from the corporate side. They're not always wanting to keep people for years and years. They don't want to set them up for what could happen down the road, and they're slashing. And usually that comes from, you know, when you think about it from the organizational side, it comes because they're preoccupied with short-term and bottom-line thinking. You know, they often view the employees as little more than a resource. You know, it can be hired and fired and manipulated. And, you know, if an organization or a company looks at their employees as pieces to their financial gain and not as people, you know, the employees see that as a lack of loyalty, and then that breeds a lack of loyalty from their side, which probably is fair. So it's a tough deal, but I also believe that, you know, we've kind of been inundated for quite some time now that, you know, whatever's best for me financially, however I can, you know, get above the next person and get above the next person and get above the next person, that lack of loyalty can bring a lot of problems because, you know, if it's coming from the organization, you got employees that have their resumes out there, and maybe they're nervous about being laid off. Of course, then from the other side, when your resume is always out there, you just kind of job hop, and that's not always beneficial either.
One of the examples that you talk about as far as a model of building loyalty is the story of Ernest Shackleton. And that is one of my favorite models for leadership. Tell me a little bit about why you chose the story, and maybe just a brief synopsis for people who aren't familiar with Shackleton's story, and then why you included it in this chapter.
Well, there's definitely tons of stories about loyalty, and it's hard to sometimes pick, you know, some of the best ones. And I know for me, when I think you probably also saw in that chapter, I tried to have one story of the past, which would be the story about Ernest Shackleton, because he was a special man that had these Antarctica expeditions, and you know, ended up having some shipwrecks and showed loyalty to his crew and saved a number of lives. And in history, it's kind of an interesting thing. It goes back all the way to, you know, 1915. But I also wanted to have a few stories in there recently, too. And, you know, when the economy went bad a few years back, you know, I put a story in that chapter 4 about Southeastern Freight Lines and how they had a trucking company in the Sun Belt. So if you think from kind of Virginia all the way down to Florida and then back across toward Texas, they're one of the most successful trucking companies, you know, in the United States. And for 50 years, they had an increase in their profits until that economy crashed. And, you know, when these other companies, they were making cuts of different 401k plans and all these different pieces and laying people off, they decided to not lay anybody off, to not make any of those cuts, and for the first year in over 50-some years, not make a profit so they could keep all those people. And they cared about their families. You know, I ended up going up to Charlotte, North Carolina, and I met one of the big managers up there at one of those plants, and he said, the loyalty that the owners showed has had such an impact on us that he said for all the years he's been there, he's never seen the morale higher than it's been these last couple years, and it was all based on the loyalty when all the other companies were cutting, and this company said, no, we're going to keep everyone, we're going to take care of their families, and we're going to get through this crisis together. So it's kind of interesting to hear stories from history and even recent history, and hopefully they're inspiring to the reader.
Well, they absolutely could be if people do take the time to think about the choices that they have to face, the way that they could make decisions. And again, often it's looking at long-term gain versus short-term gain. And the investments that we make in people and to work to inspire people are the ones that can have the most powerful long-term gains. But it's needing to have that vision beyond the immediate. And yes, you do need to make money to stay in business. You can't consistently lose money. However, what you're willing to do to demonstrate loyalty, as the story illustrated, can really build loyalty from those employees.
And you know what's interesting to me as well, kind of like we talked about earlier, is when a team gets stronger, you see these greater results in production. But if there is a lack of loyalty, say on both sides, from the employees and from the leadership, that creates a different type of culture. You know, that's not the positive atmosphere and the team culture that you want. That starts to develop a culture of a us versus them kind of atmosphere. And now there's this kind of battle field, you know, in the organization. And when you have an us versus them culture, I wouldn't expect to see too much productivity.
I wouldn't either, because there's too much energy spent trying to protect oneself or one's colleagues. And you're also not as likely to be giving your best ideas when you don't feel like you're valued.
Exactly.
So speaking of being valued, let's move into the next principle. And you, interestingly, took the concept of caring and divided it into two parts. The first part related to caring, you talked about the physical environment. And I have been a fan of Dr. Leo Biscaglia since I worked with educational opportunity programs back in the 80s. And I didn't realize the way that he had come across beginning to write about caring. And so it was very interesting for me to read that here. And so talking about caring in the physical environment, how does that inspire people?
Yeah, it was interesting because that particular professor, you know, when he talked about and even argued about that there's a value to personal attention and the personal attention even coming down to the physical environment. And it was kind of interesting. When I spoke over the years, you know, this is my 18th or 19th year, and I've been in so many different venues at so many different events, and it just comes up, I would say it's probably come up almost every time, and I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of events, probably even thousands, because I speak multiple times, sometimes even at one event. But you'll hear people say, how's the environment here? You know, what is the setting? Is it too hot? Is it too cold? Is there color? Do we need it to be dark? Do we need it to be light? Well, after this happens, when they go back to that section of the warehouse or the office building, are they productive there? You know, how do you set up stuff for that to be productive? And really all it is, and this is kind of interesting, it feels to me, and you, I think you'd probably agree with this because you have a sixth grader and I have a sixth grader, trying to teach my boy what it means to think about other people and just think of other people before yourself sometimes, and what would be a great way to help someone. You know, I used to have these T-shirts made years ago, and they just had a simple phrase on the front. It just said, help people. That was it. No fancy drawings or anything like that. It was just a shirt that said, help people. And it's really interesting to me as I've traveled and talked to so many different leaders and different organizations that's really what this is about. You know, that you can inspire someone by caring. And in this part one, chapter five, it was about the physical environment. You know, I think in educational circles, when I think about, and again, you and I have children, same thing. Do they have a good setting, you know, where they sit and the colors in the room and the lighting? When I think back to when I was in the university and in grad school, the different settings where there might be one class I'm ready to fall asleep in, but in a different setting, I was pretty engaged. So it's not rocket science. It's really just thinking about other people and learning how to set up an environment so they can be the most productive.
And sometimes that doesn't take a lot of money. Other times, if you're looking at some ergonomics, but even if you just allow people to bring in their own green plants, for example.
That's absolutely true. And I can tell you from experience, because when I was in graduate school, 20 years ago, I used to paint on the side to, make money for grad school. And I noticed how when people started saying, well, we'd like an accent wall in our home. And I go, okay, well, that looks really nice. And then sometimes when we would do buildings for companies, and they would say, we don't want to just have the same color in the entire building. Maybe we can have a hallway a certain color, or maybe an accent wall in that building. And I've actually done some consulting with different groups who are building, big organizations. And I've told them, hey, that wall right there would be great with a different color. And it just goes back to thinking just some basic things about other people and what the setting can look like so that it can be the most productive for what they want to accomplish.
Absolutely. And if you can give people some input into that, again, indicating that you care about them, that's going to get you additional loyalty and productivity. Chapter 6, you take caring and look at it from the social perspective. And Bob Nelson is one of my favorite writers when it comes to rewards and recognition. He's written things like 1500 Ways to Reward Employees. And you start that chapter with a quote from Bob Nelson that says, take time to appreciate employees, and they will reciprocate in 1,000 ways. Can you talk a little bit about the social environment and expressing caring in that way?
Yeah, and one of the things that I've heard, and this is probably, I would say, even one of the most important pieces to the whole puzzle, but is that when you talk with leaders and they say, we have some struggles, and I say, well, what's happening? Well, we don't feel there's a lot of production. And I say, how come? Well, we're having some problems with, this, and they'll say who the specific people are, and then I might go talk to those people and say, what is it do you think that's holding you back a little bit? And they'll say, I don't feel appreciated. They'll say phrases like, I feel undervalued. I don't feel like they think about me in the sense of when I do something well, I don't get a lot of thank yous. And that really does take a toll on people after a while, because when you feel undervalued, when you feel unappreciated, it kind of brings about in that atmosphere, in that culture, that negative spirit that's kind of around. Yes, it again, it goes back to some basic principles where you tell those leaders, hey, I know you've got a lot to do. I know you've got a lot on your plate. And I know you've got a ton of meetings and a lot of stress. But you have to tell your people how much you appreciate them. You have to say thank you. You need to go out, talk with them a little bit, shake their hands, say great job. Hey, grab a couple. You know, this is one thing that my organization and something I'm, you know, I've learned from some of the mentors that I've been around is, you know, once a year you get a stack of different gift cards from different restaurants. Matter of fact, we did this actually today. It's kind of interesting that just came up. And we keep some gift cards around. And when we see different people excel in helping my organization here, we send them a gift card and say, hey, you know what? Go out to a nice dinner, a movie, get some Starbucks, whatever it is. We really appreciate what you've done. So when leaders don't get that, many times you'll often see the results within that organization not as high as they could be, because when those people don't feel appreciated, that social environment that shows that you care, it takes a purpose. Let's go back to that word again. You have to purpose in your mind, in your heart, on your calendar as a leader. Hey, get out there. Talk with your people, meet with them, and it's not just thank yous. I mean, you can go farther, and you've seen this probably in that chapter, where, you know, get to know their names of their spouses. You know, if they have children, if maybe they have a child that plays on the same soccer team as your child, or things like that. That can go a long ways, just that social idea of caring, and especially the appreciation.
And that echoes one of the keys, the secret of teams that Mark Miller wrote about, which is that community, that esprit de corps, and that language was used in your book as well, the importance of that connectedness in when it comes to really having people inspired to do their best work because they feel valued, and having, you know, known people who've worked in companies where they say, you know what, when I first started, I really cared and did my best, you know, they don't appreciate it. And I'm just going to go put in my time and go home.
Yep, and that's a sad situation when you see those people. And really, if you can, and this is one thing about leaders that they need to understand, you know, these things aren't natural. You know, this is a learned thing. This is something you learn and you discipline yourself to do. You know, one of the easy ways to work through that appreciation thing is give fast and appropriate feedback. I mean, if you see someone doing something right when you're walking by, stop right then. You know, stop right there and say, man, great job. And I was just walking by here and I saw what you were doing. I just want to say I really appreciate that. Sometimes that little fast, appropriate feedback, that helps you, because if you put it off, you might forget, and then all of a sudden you're in meetings and you're moving on to other things. And as a leader, one thing you don't want to do is forget to tell those people thank you for how good a job they're doing.
Absolutely. And that's some of the best kinds of coaching, in-the-moment coaching and feedback that can really go a long way with your employees. We have about 15 minutes left, Jeremy. Time flies when we're having fun. We have a couple more principles to talk about yet, actually three. I do want to give the phone number again for people who are listening who have questions for you about any of the principles that we've talked about so far or about writing the book. That number is 347-215-8390. And I also have a chat room open, so for people who are listening to the podcast, if you have a question for Jeremy, please feel free to type that in. Chapter 7 is on understanding. And many of my listeners have likely either read The 7 Habits by Stephen Covey or are familiar with those. And so the principle of seek first to understand, then be understood is the quote that you chose for Chapter 7. How is understanding helpful to inspire people?
Well, I think it goes back again to this idea of one life. You know, if you think about your best friend, you know, think about your spouse, or you think about your children, there's a concept there that we learned through time in our closest relationships of do we understand each other? You know, do we understand each other's words? Do we understand each other's nonverbals and things like that? Well, when you said that, I didn't know that's really what you meant. Oh, okay. Well, I thought you meant this. And through time, and you know, when you have like a best friend, you understand each other so well. And it just makes the relationship grow and blossom. And that's the same principle we need in a workplace. For some reason, I don't know why, we just for some reason seem to lack understanding. And sometimes it's, you know, connected to other things. But, you know, I think that you've probably said this before, I'm sure, is, you know, when you're communicating with someone, just so I understand what you just said, can I just say it back to you? Because I want to make sure we're on the same page. You know, there's certain phrases that you always hear, you know, the same page, or just to make sure I understand. That's huge, because when there's a misunderstanding and the ball gets dropped, again, that affects results. And, you know, when you'll hear people that don't feel inspired, they'll often use a phrase, I don't think they ever understand what I'm saying. I don't think they understand what I'm doing. Maybe they don't even understand me, my skill set or my personality. So those are those things that I like to go back to and say, okay, have you done a personality profile of every person? Are you trying to understand who they are, you know, their natural tendencies and bents? Yes, okay. Do you understand when they communicate? You know, does the ball get dropped somehow? Okay, what are you doing to communicate clearly? If you understand friends, spouse, children, take that into the workplace, it's great when everyone understands each other, and that's where results can really take off as well.
And that is such an important concept, that idea that just because we're using the same words, we may not be saying the same thing. And especially, there are so many words we throw around like accountability and responsibility. And it's been about a year ago now, interviewed Linda Galindo, who wrote the 85% Solution. And her Accountability That Works program is one that I'm certified to facilitate. And the first exercise is having people define accountability, responsibility, and empowerment. And when I've done this for different organizations, and I ask them to define them ahead of me going in to do the training, they're shocked when they read the answers, because I anonymously list them all, and they overlap. Some people define accountability as responsibility and vice versa. And they chuckle because they realize as they've been using this language, they're not talking necessarily about the same thing. So having that conversation, operationalizing some key concepts for your team or your business can make a huge difference when it comes to everybody rowing in the same direction, so to speak.
And right now, because we live in that culture of, you know, can I multitask? And sometimes that's a blessing and sometimes that's a curse. And that's many times where you're going to lose that understanding. Well, you're typing or you're writing, you're doing something else while someone is supposed to be talking with you and you're supposed to be talking with them. And, you know, it just sometimes comes down to, okay, stop typing on your computer. Okay, stop texting. Let's look at each other for a second. Let's just be clear so we understand, you know, and just be kind and share those things. And if you can be and learn, you know, if you can, I guess maybe a better phrase would be learn to be a great listener, then you won't really have a problem as much in that understanding.
Absolutely. You devoted an entire chapter to patience. How does patience connect to inspiration for you?
Yeah, I think patience is a big deal, really. I mean, because I know for me in my life, and I've seen some of the mistakes that I've made over the years, many times it's connected to that old phrase, a knee-jerk reaction. And I've gone back and said, wow, why did you react so quickly? And you should have not done that. You should have stopped, and you should have thought, you should have talked with some people. I remember one of my mentors told me one time, never make a big decision fast. You know, think about it, be patient. And I think that I hope I'm not the only one who struggles with patience, but I've noticed that when I've been more patient, I've seen other things happen in my life, professionally and personally, that have turned out very, very positive. And when I've done things based on an impatient action or that knee-jerk reaction, I've seen a lot of the balls drop that shouldn't have been. And I would say, even as I've talked with different leaders as well, that many of them shared that same thing, that it takes some wisdom. You know, it's wisdom, I like the phrase, application of knowledge. You know, part of that knowledge of knowing patience is key. Patience is helpful. You don't always have to hurry up all the time. And sometimes it's that patient person that becomes the most successful.
And as I was listening to you explain that, Jeremy, it connected to a phrase that I often use in coaching, and that is sometimes you need to slow down in order to speed up. That sometimes
right.
we're in such a hurry that we don't take the time. And I think, you know, the power of having the patience to slow down, to have a conversation, to learn more about what happened, can really inspire people.
I think you're right. And what's funny to me is I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, we were talking about principles and values, which are some, you know, those are two words that I use often. And it's funny that we teach them to our kids in their certain situations. You know, be patient in kindergarten, you know, when you're in line. You know, don't cut in front of your buddy. You know, you'll have your turn later, but be patient. You'll get to be the line leader, you know, next week. And we're, you know, and this person had a young son as well, and we were saying, isn't it funny though, but that same principle of patience we still need now, it's just in a different area. It's these principles and values, they're lifelong, but for some reason we don't always apply them throughout the rest of our lives like we hope that our children do, and maybe we think we learned a couple little things when we were young and then we disregard it, when really no, don't disregard it. It might be a more mature situation. It's going to be a different piece because of our age and where we're at in life, but the principles are still very, very important.
Absolutely. And as our time is winding down, I have several questions yet on my list. So we have two more principles, communication and integrity. It just dawned on me, Jeremy, how did you select your principles that you put in the book?
Well, it goes kind of back to the beginning when we first started. It was kind of looking back at the different leaders that I've talked with over the past, 16, 17, 18 years, and some of the theories and these themes kept coming back up. So when I noticed some of them that were kind of reoccurring, it looked to me almost like a staircase. Okay, here's six, maybe eight, maybe nine of these continually come up, and these great leaders seem to possess all nine or so of these. Not just possess them, but they live them out consistently. You know, they live them out in the workplace, obviously, because that's where they see these results, you know, in the organization. But I would see them socially or with their families, and it seemed like they were consistently having these principles and values there. And, you know, communication, you know, just for time's sake, going back to the understanding. It's the same principle. They're kind of connected again, kind of like we talked about passion and purpose being connected. These two, very well connected, communicating to be clear. You know, make sure that you say everything that needs to be said. Make sure that there's understanding there. So, you know, if you need to say it more than once, you don't have to treat someone like a child, but sometimes repetition can be good. Maybe it needs to be verbal, maybe an email or a text or something like that as well. Just to make sure you're communicating on all levels. So pretty basic principle, but again, sometimes even those basic ones we forget about.
And finally, you ended with the principle of integrity. What does integrity mean to you?
Well, there's a definition that I really like that is to know the right thing, to say the right thing, and to do the right thing. So it's interesting that when I think about integrity, that issue that builds trust, you know, when someone says, you know, I trust them because they have integrity. Well, what does that mean? Well, when they say something, or when they do something, or we find out kind of what they know, they keep it on that kind of that right plane. You know, they don't want to get off on that wrong plane where people are lying or cheating or deceiving or doing kind of underhanded things, trying to serve themselves. And you know, when that happens, if the employees know, like for instance, let's say it's a leadership issue, that they're just in it for themselves, they're kind of skimming over here, maybe stealing over there, so they start to build that within the culture. Now some of the employees, Well, that's what my boss does. You know, he took a few of those things on his own, you know, so maybe I'll take a few things for myself. And that builds a culture that you don't want to have in an organization. You know, and we've seen, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, over the years, some of these leaders that who are now in prison or their companies have gone belly up. And it's sad. It's sad when they do that, because the very opposite is true for a lot of these successful companies. When you read the stories of the integrity that people have had, wow, it really inspires people. And you talk to those employees that go, you know, I trust my boss. You know, I trust the manager, and they trust me. And I've got their back, and they've got mine, because we've kind of built this culture of integrity. And that's a big deal.
Absolutely. Jeremy, what is a question you wish I would have asked you in this interview, but I did not?
Wow, that is a tough one. That is that's a really tough one. I mean, I guess kind of off the top of my head, maybe who was a hero in leadership, maybe something like that.
Okay, so how would you answer that question?
Well, I know for me, one of my heroes for sure, I like history. You know, I talked about my dad being in education. He taught history for a long time. But Abraham Lincoln for me, and I still have not had the chance to see that new movie. I know there was an Oscar, I think, to the man who played Lincoln. But for that man right there, in the time period that we were in, you know, the leadership that he showed, and when I think about the principles, I could almost, you know, have a second book with Lincoln based on all these principles, because he was patient, he was loyal, he communicated well, people always understood where he was coming from, and he had tons of integrity. And, you know, I just see, and I think of the pressure that he was under, you know, because it was a national situation with Civil War and all those pieces and slavery. I just love reading about him and really, really respect him. He's definitely one of my heroes.
Well, interestingly, he's one of mine as well, and I was very excited when my 11-year-old said he saw the preview to the movie, and he said, I want to see that. And we haven't seen it yet either, unfortunately. So knowing that there could be another book for you, this is a pre-launch time for you for your book, Inspired People, Produce Results. If I read correctly on Amazon, its publication date is March 13th, so people can pre-order it right now. And on your website, which is listed in the show notes, you have a special offer for people who pre-order the book. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, one thing that we wanted to do before the actual launch date was we thought if we could offer some free resources that might be helpful to some people who are maybe employees, maybe leaders, either way in the workplace, things that would help them, we said, you know what? If they'll pre-order it on our website, which is very simple, it's just jeremykingsley.com, we're giving away three free pieces. One, we're doing a special leadership workbook called SCORE, and it's about a 40 to 50-page workbook that you can go through yourself, and it goes through this acronym, SCORE, for Sacrifice, Character, Opportunity, Respect, and Excellence, and how you're growing in those areas. Then there's a special little PDF about purpose, which we talked about earlier in there, that goes a little more in depth. And then there's actually an audio podcast, a download, on speaking. You know, I've been traveling for 18 years as a professional speaker, and we decided that a lot of people kept asking the question, you know, how do you create your speeches? You know, what do you do? And for years and years, I didn't want to tell anyone. I felt it was kind of my little secret, and I decided to go ahead and do a special podcast. So it's how to design a great speech based on the principles that I've used over the years, and that's an audio podcast. So those three things are free, probably for about another week. That will be up as a special offer on jeremykingsley.com.
Wonderful. Jeremy, do you have any other events going on this week during your social media launch?
Well, right now, the biggest issue for us is on Twitter. We've really been pushing everything. My Twitter handle is @Jeremy_Kingsley. So Jeremy and then the _Kingsley. It's been really neat because we've had Mark Sanborn, who wrote The Fred Factor. He's been tweeting with us. Ken Blanchard, obviously, One Minute Manager. He's been tweeting some things out there for us. So we've been trying this week especially to get people to come to Twitter, get people to go to our website. It's kind of that last big launch where you can still get the free resources. You can see kind of the conversations that we're having on Twitter, and hopefully that would be very helpful and encouraging to a lot of people.
Great. And both your website and your Twitter handle are in the show notes. And so as we are wrapping up, Jeremy, for people who are listening now and who are downloading this podcast in the future, if they have questions for you or they're interested in your services, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Absolutely. If they would want me to do any consulting or speaking and they want to learn more about it, just to the website again, it's just www.jeremykingsley.com, and there's a very simple email. It's just info@jeremykingsley.com, so they can send us an email with any questions, and they can also learn a ton on the website.
And finally, Jeremy, in our last couple minutes, what are one or two key messages you want listeners to take away from this interview?
Well, I think the one key thing would be that every person should have a set of principles and values. You know, that's what I talk about in the book, are these values and these principles. And if a person can have a set of principles and values and be committed to them, be committed to consistently live those things out, they're going to see incredible growth and results in their personal and professional life.
Oh, sorry, I coughed and forgot to unmute the button. Jeremy, thank you so much for being with me tonight. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, and I'm very excited to promote Inspired People Produce Results.
Well, thanks for having me.
And again, to connect with Jeremy, you can. There's a link to order the book at Jeremy's website, which is jeremykingsley.com. And connect with him on Twitter at Jeremy_Kingsley. And next week, I will be talking to Stephen Snyder about leadership, the art of struggle, I believe. My screen just went blank. Thank you all so much for listening and for coming to Spark. Please take action on something you heard tonight that may be the spark to ignite a positive change in your life to inspire you to produce results or to inspire other people in your life. I highly recommend Jeremy's book, Inspired People Produce Results. Thank you again, Jeremy, for being here. I wish you the best of success.
Thank you.
And until next time, to my listeners, please share the show with someone you think may find it of value, and be inspired and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Ms. Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.